This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 17th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 208. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature. The pandemic has brought us the perfect storm, a global shortage of labor, energy, and transport. I welcome supply chain expert Glenn Ross of ACC Group to explain why it happened and what it means for average Canadians. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or do Vancouver voters need a runoff before the next civic election in less than a year? There are now four candidates already declared. The NPA's John Cooper, Christy Clark's ex-husband Mark Marison, 2018 runner-up Ken Sim, and incumbent Kennedy Stewart. When Sim was the NPA candidate, he fell 957 votes shy of becoming the first Asian face in the mayor's chair. He's trying again, but as the leader of the new party called A Better City. Except for being caught joyriding as an 18-year-old, businessman Sim has no apparent baggage. But what he's doing now has raised questions, specifically his appearances with local friends of the Chinese Communist Party at a ceremony on October 2nd and his nomination banquet at a Chinatown banquet hall on October 13th. On Twitter, Sim said he's not interested in debates on international affairs because he's running to lead our city. Be that as it may, the job of mayor is also the job of chair of the police board. Citizens expect the mayor to keep the city safe, in all ways. While Vancouver's diversity should make everyone proud, it has also been subject to undue influence from the government of the People's Republic of China. Exhibits A and B, Peter German's Dirty Money Reports, and the Cullen Commission on Money Laundering in BC. Both have probed the impact of mainland China money in casinos, real estate, cars, and the drug underworld. We're still dealing with a virus that originated in Wuhan, and we can't forget how China practices hostage diplomacy. In 2019, the McDonald Laurier Institute think tank named Xi Jinping the Newsmaker of the Year because Beijing has become as powerful a force as Ottawa in the affairs of Canada, especially BC. Author Charles Burton said that, quote, "We ignore Xi Jinping's growing influence in Canada at our peril," end quote. That means the mayor of Vancouver cannot ignore China. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It is the perfect storm. Economies are coming back to life because of mass vaccination programs, but the pandemic is not over. Some countries are still waiting for their vaccine shipments, and the deadly virus still spreads. Stocks are hitting highs and demand is increasing for goods, but there is a global shortage of energy, labor, and transport. In the UK, empty gas pumps. In China, rolling blackouts at factories to save energy. Off the coast of Los Angeles, 60 container ships are in line for the biggest port on the West Coast. Here in Vancouver, the Port of Vancouver counted 79 vessels on October 15th, including 12 container ships. Why is this happening, and what does this mean to you? My guest is Glenn Ross, a global supply chain consultant in White Rock, BC, with ACC Group. He publishes a weekly newsletter on the industry. Why does this matter to the average consumer who's going to buy bananas at a grocery store, going to buy a smartphone, maybe even in the market for a car, or making their Christmas wish list?
I track the production of produce and vegetables. You mentioned bananas and stuff in South America, Africa, and the Asian countries. And just like this shortage of container availability and deck space around the world globally is congesting the international supply chain system, so too are these guys affected, and they tend to be at the back of the line. So the major shipping lines, of which there are about four now main alliances, are ignoring sending out empty containers to manufacturers. The Midwest and America is expected to drop 40% in export capacity in the next 3 or 4 months. Their produce guys are now dumping and plowing stuff back into the ground, as are the people in Africa, as in South America. They just can't get empty containers. There's 91 million containers around the world. At the moment, there's nearly 5.5 million containers sitting at anchor or drifting alongside ports, 154 outside Chinese ports. So these vessels are now have containers on the vessels that are not in general use. We expect that inflation will go up between 3 and 5 percentage points between now and Christmas alone. That's bad. That's average. When you cascade that down into the stores and stuff, I've seen reports and photographs now coming out of the UK where the shelves are expected to be 80% empty by Christmas. It is a huge problem coming in there. The UK also has Brexit. Everybody rushed to get ahead of the customs and excise changes that were coming aboard and hoarded stock, blocking up all the supply chain channels on the land side of the UK. They can't bring in exports now. Imports, sorry. So in the same vein, when you look at microchips, 85% of the world's microchips are manufactured in Taiwan, 54% in SMR. One company makes 54% of the microchips. Those chips are now in dramatic shortage because of two things. One is the congestion. And the second one is when this whole thing unfolded and Wuhan shut down and all the manufacturers and all the retailers said, whoa, we're going to see a drop in sales. They started canceling orders. Steamship lines started parking off their vessels outside Singapore. But what did the American, what did the global consumer do? They went inland, they went indoors, closed the doors and started ordering online. Particularly two primary sectors. One was electronics, because they wanted to work from home. The other one was home exercise equipment. At the same time, America unilaterally exited the International Postal Union Agreement, which allowed China to enter into that there, which meant that they also increased the Section 321, tariff-free section of the American trade. NAFTA was engaged in that as well. Well, that meant there's been a flood into America and North America through Canada into the US of small parcel post. And that in and alone of itself has congested all the networks. And on top of that, you throw in the lack of equipment, landside and seaside, you have a perfect storm. So that means the chips that go into motor cars, there's 250,000 Ford F-150s parked off, fully assembled outside of their chips. You drive down 152nd Avenue in White Rock, where I live, South Surrey. There are no new cars on the parking lots. They're all secondhand cars. In the UK right now, secondhand low mileage cars are commanding higher prices than brand new vehicles. So it's not going to be a good Christmas. Inflation 3 to 5% up on average, which means that foodstuffs and stuff will be even higher. Not a good situation.
So we're facing right now, in the next several months, perhaps even the next couple of years, higher prices and scarcity of goods. That's what it looks like on Main Street for the average Canadian. What does it mean for Wall Street?
So in America, when you had the PPE shortage, when this entire COVID-19 thing exploded, and there was a mass movement amongst manufacturers, particularly in the Eastern Hemisphere, to switch production lines into making PPE, which is a quick windfall for huge, huge windfalls, to get quality. So that now means that there's a clamoring in the United States, particularly under the Trump era, for onshoring and nearshoring. But they particularly wanted to onshore. It's never going to happen. It's not going to happen. America is now a service-based economy, no longer a manufacturing economy. And that goes back to what I mentioned earlier, the Walmart effects in 82. Put that aside. So now, if you are the CEO of a company that says, okay, I'm going to introduce my manufacturing back into the USA. But, you know, and I go to Wall Street and have my quarterly session with all the investors to say, you know what, so therefore our profits this year and next year are going to drop by 30, 40% because I have to pay for these new manufacturing plants. Forget the supply chain implications thereof and the raw materials implications. Suddenly, I don't have a job at the end of the day because I've just told my shareholders I'm going to cut their returns in half. So there's no appetite. For any publicly traded company in the United States, there is zero appetite to cut their returns in half for the next 2 or 3 years. Not going to happen. Which means onshoring is not going to happen to the extent unless it's mandated or strategically important to a particular company. Wall Street will not allow that to happen, which means that offshoring will continue like it has been and will increase going forward. Nearshoring, Canada is viewed to be too expensive with our social costs, and we don't have the infrastructure to do that mass manufacturing. And Mexico is not developed enough. Vietnam, 1,800 miles of infrastructure, not going to cope with it. If you take 2% of Chinese manufacturing and move it into Vietnam, Vietnam is clogged up for the next 20 years. They can't do it. So the world's not geared to move away from China at the moment to an onshoring or nearshoring project. It's just not geared to do that. A further example is if you look at masks, which is the big thing at the moment, Chinese government-controlled companies control 95% of the raw materials that go into mask manufacturing. They can control that that market for the next 20 years. You've got to look way, way across the horizon to see and get rid of all the rhetoric and the hyperbole and the emotions to come back to what reality is going to do here. So Wall Street's not going to be happy, and they're not going to allow that to happen, which is short-sighted, but reality.
My guest is Glenn Ross, a global supply chain consultant in White Rock, BC. He pointed to the microchip shortage. We all run digital lives with smartphones, smartwatches, TVs, PVRs, our cars. The shortage could be a bigger problem. It could have major geopolitical ramifications on the Pacific Rim.
If you follow history and you look at the revolutions, you look at the unrest that happens across the various industries and countries and kingdoms, for argument's sake, if you go back in time when technology spurs on things and wars are the greatest thing for technology. And put that aside, the chip manufacturing congestion and shortage is not going to go away, I reckon, for the next 12 to 18 months, which means prices are going to escalate, supply is going to be shortened. Right now, you're looking at motor cars in the parking lots, you go down to the cars along 152nd, they're empty. They're about 5-10% full, which is the first time I've seen that in my life. The next thing you're going to see is on the shelves. When you go to the Best Buys and all these guys that sell electronics, you're not going to have them. All the electronics work on chips, microchips predominantly. Taiwan produces 85% of those. You can't get them. And secondly, when they do go in, they go into small electronics manufacturer, even down to razors have chips inside. Everything has chips inside. So we haven't even seen the sharp edge of this particular spear. It's still coming. It's coming down the track, which means prices are going to escalate and inconvenience is going to go up. Where that leads to is now a race for the microchips. And that tends to go to governmental and military institutions first. And if they haven't got them and they're threatened, they will do what they have to do to secure them. China's aware of that. The Chinese government's aware of that, that they need to have secure those chips to keep their monumental growth factor going forward. It's now down to 3.5-4%. You look at Evergrande, that is the real estate company in China, one of four major ones. We're looking at a $3.5 to $5.5 trillion deficit happening in the next 12 months. You throw that on top of this. The world is not in a good situation right now. And I'm the eternal optimist, but this is not a good situation facing us. And who knows who pulls what trigger, to coin a pun, or to who takes what actions to secure their long-term growth and stuff. But if you look at the American Midwest, the farmers who are not exporting, they're plowing stuff back in the ground, have gone to the U.S. Congress and said, we need help. And Congress said, quite rightly, we don't regulate supply and demand. We don't do that. And then they turn around and say, well, hang on, you need to understand there's a 22 midterm election coming up now. And if you want our money, you want our votes, you will do something about it. And suddenly you've seen a plethora of investigation committees and that type of stuff working. Biden making his announcements this week about 24/7 in L.A., which is not really going to help them much. Things are starting to spin, and we hope that somebody out somewhere will have a sane mind and control the spin.
Finally, what is the solution for the short term and for the long term for this supply chain chaos that's facing the world right now?
Okay, so in my consultations the last 6 to 12 months, I've been warning people and cautioning them to be not expecting an immediate to short-term solution here. When this thing unfolded, and the Chinese shut down, followed by the retailers in America shutting down, European retailers shutting down their orders, chips being parked off. What actually happened is that the Americans, use them as an example, the American industry depleted its inventories. American inventories at retail and industrial levels are at record lows, lowest for 25 to 30 years. Now, as long as those are low, they'll keep demanding. As long as they keep demanding, they'll keep congesting the international gateways. And as long as they continue to do that, they will put pressure on the Chinese manufacturers and the Asian manufacturers, which is the breadbasket of where they buy from. So I don't see any uplift in the congestion between now and the end of next year. In the port situation, they're union-controlled. They do not want to work extra shifts, and they will not talk about automation. They signed agreements 3 weeks ago in the Port of LA, which is affiliated to the ports of Vancouver and Prince Rupert. So if you can't suck out the containers from the ports, to create a vacuum within the ports, to put more containers in and ship them out. To give you an example, on the American East Coast, they've spent $310 billion on upgrading their ports to meet the big ship demand. That meant putting new cranes in place that go higher and extend further across to access the containers on the 12,000 FEU ships. That meant they needed new power stations onside the ports. That meant they had to go to the rail companies to extend the loops, the rail loops inside the ports to evacuate the full containers and bring back the empty ones. And then, of course, they did all that money, spent all that money and said, we're now ready to go. Then they found out that 93% of American bridges on the eastern seaboard cannot take double-stack trains. Everything for nothing. All for naught. So now they've gone back to the American federal government and said, we need $97 to $100 billion of infrastructure to raise all the road bridges to access the ports. So that's a long-term project. It requires political and capital involvement. It's not going to happen. So until the American inventories and the Canadian inventories are replenished, you're not going to see a let-up of this year. So I reckon this will go into quarter one, quarter two of 2023, if we're lucky. I was looking at some of my reports from last year, and I was saying quarter two, quarter three in 2021. No, it's got worse. And what you're now going to see is a lot of political posturing. I was reading reports today and yesterday where they're blaming the Biden administration and stuff. And I wrote to them, I said, guys, it's not. It's an American problem, not a presidential problem. It's a global problem. So I don't see, Bob, that this is going to let up between now and the end of next year. You're going to see prices escalate dramatically, particularly in low-end goods like Dollar Tree and Dollar General and those guys. Whereas I used to pay $1,950 for a 40-foot container high cube from China to America, I'm now paying $27,000 for the same container. Never mind $2,500 to secure an empty container to load into, and another $2,500 peak surcharge they're now starting to levy. And when I get that, I get a container on a ship, and I'm bringing out PPE, gloves and medical equipment, and I land here. Now I've got to find a train, a rail, or a ramp somewhere in inland America to offload it. They're all congested. This whole thing has been building for 25, 30 years. And until the spark plug of the global economy, which is the USA, sits down and says, forget politics and forget that stuff. We need to do our infrastructure and bring it up to the new world with high-speed rail and stuff like that. Not going to happen. Not a good situation.
Thanks again to my guest, Glenn Ross in White Rock, BC. He's a global supply chain consultant and publisher of a weekly newsletter. For more information, go to accgroupco.com.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Taiwan news, Taiwan's Mandarin education program bears fruit at U.S. universities. Following Harvard's decision to move its Mandarin summer program from Beijing to Taipei, the Ministry of Education has said there are 21 other American universities that have partnered up with Taiwan schools for Mandarin language education. As China's Confucius Institutes are losing prominence and shutting down, the Ministry of Education has invested $1.6 million U.S. dollars to implement its excellent Mandarin language program. Under this initiative, it will send 36 teachers from 10 Taiwan universities to teach in the U.S. and invite 168 American students to Taiwan to study Mandarin. In the Korea Herald, new global digital tax will push up Korea's tax revenue. The two-pillar tax proposal on taxing the digital economy and ushering in a global minimum tax rate, spearheaded by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, was endorsed by 136 countries on Friday. Under the global digital tax system, which will come into effect in 2023, one or two Korean companies will be obligated to pay tax in countries where they make sales. Meanwhile, some 80 foreign digital platform enterprises operating in Korea will be affected by the new rule. Companies like Samsung and Google will be affected. In the Manila Times, Filipino journalist wins Nobel Peace Prize. Rappler Chief Maria Ressa and Russian newspaper editor Dmitry Muratov were jointly given the prize. Ressa is the first Filipino to win a Nobel Prize. The Norwegian Nobel Committee cited Ressa and Muratov for their efforts to safeguard freedom of expression, which is a precondition for democracy and lasting peace. Ressa, in 2012, co-founded Rappler, a news website that has focused critical attention on the President Rodrigo Duterte regime and its controversial, murderous anti-drug campaign, the Nobel Committee said. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland removes Merge Simpson sign from freeway ramp. An anonymous artist put up a homemade sign near an on-ramp to Interstate 405 North. The artist covered up a pedestrian crosswalk sign with a sign reading Merge Simpson and drew a portrait of TV cartoon mom Marge Simpson. While Portlanders on social media were thrilled by another tribute to the long-running TV show, which appeared just blocks from the bridge the city recently dubbed the Ned Flanders Crossing after another Simpsons character, city officials said the altered sign posed risks to pedestrians and drivers. In the Bellingham Herald, should Whatcom County expect a large number of Canadians to cross once the border reopens? In the 8 weeks after August 9th, when Canada began allowing vaccinated Americans to cross for non-essential purposes, Canada welcomed almost 28,000 foreign nationals per week through its Pacific region border crossings, which include the 5 points of entry from Whatcom County. That's 2.5 times the average during the same 8 weeks in 2020, but it's about a quarter of the weekly average of 100,000 crossings from 2019, before the pandemic. In the Ashcroft Cache Creek Journal, when will the rebuild actually happen? TSB report findings cause stir over future of Lytton. An investigation by the Transportation Safety Board has found no link between railway activity and the wildfire that destroyed most of Lytton. But Edith Loring Kuhanga, the school administrator of the Stein Valley First Nations School near Lytton, isn't satisfied with the report's conclusion. The TSB began investigating after the BC Wildfire Service found a black, coal-like substance on the side of the railway tracks near Lytton, where investigators believe the fire started. However, laboratory analysis determined that the substance did not come from the train and that was suspected of causing the fire. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 17th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 17th in 1970, during the October crisis, FLQ terrorists murdered the Vice Premier of Quebec, Pierre Laporte? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.